Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Welcome back to the Short Coat Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Etler. You like that meanderings in the margins of medicine thing?
I do like that.
All right, good. See, you had to say that. Now, let's face it. Medical students love exams. But no, they really don't. In 1999, the Liaison Committee on Medical Education, which accredits medical colleges, decreed that we would incorporate clinical skills assessment into the curriculum. And students everywhere rejoiced. Then in 2004, the National Board of Medical Examiners began using the Step 2 Clinical Skills Test as part of the United States Medical Licensing Examination. And so this step, one of the three that seeks to ensure medical students are becoming competent doctors, required students to demonstrate their clinical skills on live actors. Those actors played standardized roles so that the examinations would be meaningful. So the University of Iowa created the performance-based assessment program. And the PBA program was charged with preparing third-year students for this new exam. They did this exactly the same way as the MBME. They hired actors to portray patients with various complaints and pitted them against third- and fourth-year students and what they had learned about interviewing such patients. Pitted them. They were pitted. Since then, the program has grown tremendously. They don't just test medical students. They teach them as well. Things like general physical exam skills, PE skills specific to male and female patients, communication skills, and I gather a whole lot more. So we thought it would be interesting to get a couple of medical students together. Actually, we have four today, medical students, together with what they, I'm sure, lovingly call fake patients to talk about their various views of this endeavor. So I'm joined by students Cole Chaney, Sunuri Jayateleka, Michael Zhang, and Keenan Larraway. And some simulator patients as well, JC Luxon and Mary Nell Jackson. Thanks for coming, guys.
You're welcome.
Yeah. There we go. Yeah. So, guys, to prepare, I collected some questions from students and simulated patients, and we'll answer them today during the program. But I want to start out with our SPs. And I wanted you to tell us something about your background and how you got into this. Mary, let's start with you. What do you do when you're not tutoring medical students, and why did you decide to do this?
When I'm not teaching medical students, I do my favorite thing, which is be a retired fifth and sixth grade science teacher. And I take Tai Chi, and I take French class, and I travel, and then I spend a lot of time here, especially this year.
Awesome. And why did you start doing this?
A neighbor of mine gave this to me as her going away gift. She was moving away, and she said, "I'm going to give you my favorite thing to do." And so she gave me Ellen Franklin's name.
Ellen is the director of the program. And cool. All right. So did you have to try out? What's the process?
In truth, the process was really easy. I thought, ooh, I'm applying for a job, a paying job, not paying a lot, but paying. And I came in and Barb Brown handed me a bunch of forms and said, here, fill these out. And I said, but this is information for taking text. She said, she'll hire you. So it was an interview with Ellen and watching some videos of JC.
So cool. JC, what do you do when you're not here?
I'm mainly an artist type person. I'm a writer and a director and an actor, and I do a lot of work with Prenzi Players, a theater company in the Quad Cities.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And how did you? So obviously that's your in, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, I started working as a simulated patient in 1995, I believe, in the fall. Mm-hmm. And back then the program was only for first and second year students, and I worked with the program for a couple years. Then I was having fun in Rhode Island for a couple years. Then I moved back, and then when the program for third year started up, I think in 2002 or 2001, I graduated up to Ellen's program when it began, and I've been with her ever since.
Sweet. So thank you both. So I did, as I said, I collected some questions. So why don't we start with the students? Does one of you have a question you'd like to ask?
Yeah, I thought we'd start maybe. This is Cole, by the way. I'm at M1. I thought an interesting question for you guys would be, you said this year, Marinell, that recently you're spending a lot more time here. So how's the program changed? I think clearly there's been a lot of fluctuations going on.
Profoundly. I mean, until this time, we had two roles. We were a test. or we were helping in a small group setting to help teach students communication skills. And this year, we started teaching the physical exam skills. That means we needed to learn them. It's sort of, can you say sternocleidomastoid? So it's a lot, a big, steep learning curve for us.
And this is the first year that the programs for first and second year students and for third year students are all kind of under one umbrella. Before, the simulated patients for the first and second years and the standardized patients for the third years were basically non-overlapping, magisteria, as Stephen Gould would say. But now everybody's intermixed, and we've got former standardized patients working on focused history and former simulated patients working in the PBAs. So
they're not there's not patients working in one particular area. They're working in
everything. Cool. Yes, across the spectrum.
All right. Do you guys have a question? You simulated patients?
I like this first one. I might rephrase it a little bit. Is it hard to remember that even if we play mean, nasty, or impatient characters, that we're really nice people and really want to do our job well? In other words, is there a love-hate relationship with SPs?
Well, it's interesting, the way you let it off already was that there's this adversarial style. Well, did you say antagonist or what was that?
Well, you know, and to be fair, it's true. And to be fair, they were pitted against. But to be fair, that's how, the program started off as a way to examine, it was a test. And, tests are annoying because you have to perform for them. And so I think in the beginning it was like, oh, God, another hoop to jump through.
I can say that things kind of changed after you guys became PETAs instead of SP.
And we should qualify what that means.
Yeah. So. What does that mean?
Physical exam training assistants.
There you go.
So last year we started off doing physical exam skills with SPs, and then my group and like the people in our room were chosen to be the training pool when they were first implementing the program with PETAs. And so we suddenly went from doing the whole, test on each other and our partners to having us a patient, and then the PETA teaching us how to do it. So that was weird at first. But the nice thing I noticed was the relationship between us as students and then the SP before became more friendly when we were learning from you, rather than, the whole nervous anxiety relationship when we're trying to test you, do the best we can. So I liked that change.
Yeah, we like that change a lot as well.
You mean you don't like being reviled? You prefer to be
I like to be the angry patient.
I like seeing the light in the eyes of the students. When we're PETAs, students actually feel safe enough to say, I can't find this poll. I don't find it. And then the light bulb goes and they hit it and they say, oh, there it is. And because I taught 10-year-olds for a long time, that made my day. And so now I see that in med students, and I didn't see that as much before, particularly in an 85-point PE skills exam. It was, yeah, I got it.
Just kind of going along with that, do you ever notice when we're, just faking it?
Yes.
How often do you know when we're just like, yeah, there it is, and then it's like...
I feel like I always notice it. Sometimes you can't even count you off because you're going through the motions exactly right. Yes. But I can tell you're going through the motions. It might be a body language thing. I'm as a director, I'm always like staring at actors trying to figure out why I don't believe them. So,
can you just elaborate more on the body language? Like, what do you mess with Zoo when they
Well, it's kind of like it looks like there's this sort of bored multitasking happening where the body is doing something the mind is not occupied with. And often it's like the what will the next thing be thought going through while the exam is being conducted.
If you report absolutely average scores and everything, if my pulse and my blood pressure and everything else is the textbook average.
I was going to say, because by now you pretty much know what your vitals
are. Giveaway. Right.
Sweet. Who's next? I've lost track.
I can be next.
Go.
So I'm not taking a question from here. I'm asking my own. But that's okay, because I would have submitted it to here, and I would have been a student on the list. I think we've alluded to sort of the difference between the PBA program and the standardized patients in the first 2 years. And, you know, when I was in the first couple of years, we were just repeatedly told what a great experience this is for us and how wonderful it is for us to have as standardized patients, and we bought it. We just thought this is awesome. And now I've been taking PBAs, and I almost feel like my opinion hasn't really changed, but now your program is being justified to me in saying, well, you need to do this because it's going to be this way in Chicago when you take step two. And, you know, I know it, and I hear things, you know, I know this isn't like seeing a real patient. How do you guys feel about that? And what do you see as your true role?
Well, I mean, I guess as an actor, I'm always trying to make it as much like a real patient as I possibly can. But not everybody who's a standardized patient, of course, is an actor. It's probably maybe, what, a quarter of us, a third of us, maybe. It's, I would say, probably, what, a third actors, a third teachers, and a third former medical medical professionals and stuff like that. I don't know. Do you want to speak to that at all, Marinelle?
Yeah, I do, because I'm the fifth and sixth grade teacher, really. I never had anything to do with acting until I came and, you know, sort of sit at the feet of JC and Michael Pedowick and Nina and Braden and the people who have a lot of acting experience. But I am a real patient. I've been a patient at UIHC since 1967. I've had all my children there. I've lost a child there. I've had surgeries there. My husband had a very successful cancer surgery there. So that building and that institution has been incredibly important to me as a human being. Mm-hmm. So I feel as though I'm always being the patient. I mean, there's always a part of me and the patients I'm playing. So if I have a minor physical problem, but I have a deep-rooted emotional problem and I didn't know where else to turn, and I show up and you guys get it in 15 minutes, you get it, then I just feel, phew, great. Medicine's going to go on being better and better.
And I just say that, I mean, to me, to sort of jump off that, the most important thing that I think we do is provide the feedback that no one else will ever dare give you. You know, I do programs in a lot of different areas, but like in some there's like face-to-face feedback, and say the dental college, I've had to tell a dental student his breath was bad.
Awesome.
Who else will tell him his breath is bad? His patients just won't come again. You know, they'll just be like, yee, and stay away. But I felt it was my job to say that, and he was embarrassed, but thankful that somebody had called him out on that. And, you know, and so What Ellen emphasizes, and I think Marinelle would agree with, is that the communication skills are way more important from our standpoint than the medical skills, because we assume that there's a lot of people who are making sure that your medical skills are top notch, but we might be the only one to notice your eye contact. Or how are you sitting? Are you sitting in a chair that looks like you're judging us? Are you halfway across the room when you should be next to us? Do we feel comforted? Do we feel like you're on our side? All those are I think, the most important things we do from my standpoint. And then the rest of it, we're just, you know, did you ask this question? But that's nowhere near as important as the communication stuff.
So to rudely monopolize and follow up on that, because I can do that, some of the things you said, are you sitting in a chair in a way that looks like you're judging us? Mm-hmm. I have three or four questions in my packet that the students perceive that that's all you're doing. And that makes, I never think of that when I'm seeing a real patient. I hope that I do a good job in communicating that I'm not judging them, but it never occurs to me that that's, you know, part of the deal. But when I walk in and see a standardized patient, and I think some of the other questions bear this out, immediately students feel evaluated, and I think, as Dave points out, maybe not always in a positive way. You know, this is really looking to ding me, or I think one of your comments was, I don't get to mark you down for that. So you're kind of looking for ways to nickel and dime us.
Yeah, well, I mean, let's be clear, too, though. I mean, isn't that how? I mean, do you feel the same way about a biochemistry test?
You know, there's biochemistry on the whiteboard.
I know.
I just have such
I wonder why I thought of that.
I love you, Pete Rubenstein. No,
I mean, yeah. I mean, you would, right?
But that's the difference, right? The idea of medical education, I hope, and one of the things that's always impressed upon us is that the evaluation is sort of, oh, yeah, we got to do it, but we're really here as teachers, and you guys sort of say, we love that role as PETAs. We love seeing light bulbs go on, but it doesn't sound like any of that is happening, you know, during those evaluation periods. So how does that, you know, how do you try to jive that with your role as just a patient?
I mean, it's you have to do two things at the same time, which some people are, but I mean, we do have to evaluate you. That is our job. And if we don't, we've failed what we're supposed to do. On the other hand, we really have to be the patient, and we have to be extremely sensitive to whether we're being cared for in that encounter. So, for example, when you guys express empathy or something to us about our problem, if we're really in the character, it's actually a real moment. At least it is for me. I'm really responding to the empathy naturally. As soon as the time gets called, I do need to go into evaluation mode at that point, and which we try to do as thoroughly as possible on the basis of how we feel. When you failed to pull the foot tray out for me, I felt very uncomfortable during the abdominal exam. You know, that's that sort of feedback. I don't know.
I totally agree. I'm not a pro here. I'm sort of relatively new. I'm going to start my fourth year in April, so I haven't been doing this a really long time. The evaluation they might see in our eyes is, how can I capture this moment and how I felt? Because at the end of the day, we've got 10 minutes after you've had 15 minutes in which to summarize some things that are going to be of help to you. So when you said this, and I particularly am interested in being able to distinguish between, gee, I'm sorry to hear that, and, well, if you fainted the last 2 days, I'm concerned. Do you have someone home with you? That is a whole different level of empathy. And so just making those distinctions on the fly really fast is probably what students are seeing. When we look judgmental, what we're really doing is, how can I most help the students capture something they're doing that is distancing for a patient, or something they're doing that is fabulous?
And the thing that they don't get to hear ever, of course, is after an exam in the control room or the SP break room, where every exam I can think of, the SPs are sharing stories of people who just knocked it out of the park. Yeah. And somebody's, well, my guy did this when this happened. Like, wow, well, the woman I had did this. And I mean, part of our community. It's just that you guys don't get to hear us raving about you.
I thought a really good example of that, so because I'm an M1, I'm a rookie to this entire experience, and some of the classmates before me had an SP, and they said, the guy kept coughing, and I didn't give him water, and they really dinged me for that. And so I had in my mind, okay, I know how to pass this test. So, you know, the second my guy coughed, I just went over, got water, and gave it to him. And afterwards, the guy said, I felt like you just shoved that water down my throat. Like, you didn't ask if I wanted a glass of water. And so at that point, like, I think there's subtlety to empathy, and it's not just dumping water on a guy. And that's something you guys picked up on.
It's not a perfect system.
No, I think you're right, though. I screwed up pretty badly, because you'd say, like, do you want a glass of water?
You thought you had the answer, right?
And yeah.
Turned out, well, yeah, but, you know,
it was technically,
it's not the cup of water that's the important part.
I think that's the big deal, though, that you guys are trying to hit on, that there's more subtlety to this whole process.
As Ellen has observed before, we often, like, sometimes the communication skills are better with M1s at the beginning than they are by, say, the end of the second year, because once your guys' brains begin to collapse under the weight of all your medical knowledge, some of the basic human skills that you came in with has kind of gotten shoved to the back of the closet.
Or maybe, yeah, well, I was going to say, maybe you know too much at that point.
Yes.
You know, like you're sort of like, you know, oh, I know how this works now, and I can, you know, sort of back off. I don't need to, you know, sort of try and work it as hard as I did in the beginning.
Yeah.
So what kind of feedback do you give someone whose their brains collapse under the weight of medical knowledge?
Gee, I really, really want to speak to that, but not from my SP experience, from my real life experience. in one of the darkest moments of my life, clearly, is when I'm losing a beloved, active, healthy child to an illness. One of the doctors literally looked at his shoes as he discussed what his, you know, what was, what he knew about what was going on. And in many ways, the man's, we don't know, and we're not going to know, is sort of something that I grasped onto for years afterwards when I'm trying to make sense of this. He was as smart as they come, and he didn't know. He was not warm, he was not fuzzy, but he was a superb physician. So I think communication skills are terribly, terribly important, but all that knowledge that you're cramming into your head is invaluable to the people you'll treat. They will never see it as you see it, and I'm sure it will always be a stretch to try to communicate what you know, and in a humane way, but what you know is crucial. So, I mean, it's just a multi-headed monster, this whole business of what it is to be a doctor. So continue to be crushed by the weight of all the stuff you're doing.
I kind of have a follow-up to that. One of the students asked a question about, you know, how much you draw from your own life in telling us for being a patient.
Well, the for example, in the PBAs, which are probably the most involved of the characters, I would say probably the average case is like 12 pages long. That sounds about right. So it's, we have to basically memorize 12 pages of information about this character we're playing. That said, every encounter, there's going to be something that's not in that 12 pages. And then I will generally just draw on my own experience in some innocuous way that won't affect the encounter in any medical way. Now, with some of the encounters with, like, the first years, for example, the cases are much shorter. Sometimes they're a half a page. And so I just fill that up with my imagination, things that have happened to me, what might, things that I think might be challenging or amusing or upsetting. I will just throw in willy-nilly. But that's not something we can do with a PBA, because it's important that those are very standardized. So I would say there's less and less of us as you progress in general. Yeah, through that.
I agree.
Yeah.
I mean, our characters are really well delineated by the time we're doing PBAs, but not so much in other cases. But in the small group teaching sessions, the abbreviation for them is MEECHI. I don't know what it stands for. But in those sessions where you're being taught in a brief time with a few students how to ask difficult questions, for instance, or how to face difficult situations, people who are dying, people, you know, who want to commit suicide, that kind of thing. In those sessions, what is fun to watch is how much you all draw on what you know, and we draw on what we know and who we're supposed to be, to come together to say, what's a better way to do this? What's a more effective way to do this? What about the way we did this is effective? What about the way we did this is getting in the way? I love those sessions a lot, because I think PBA, I think all encounters with SPs are better when there's a little of the SP in the character they're playing, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of the human being that you were before you entered med school in your portrayal, and just sort of figuring out what makes you a better physician as you go along. I don't know if that made any sense.
Yeah, yeah, and to sort of, I would say in my experience, to go off that, it's hard with the PBAs, because you guys are aware that they're being evaluated. But in my experience, some of the students who do the best are the ones who seem to have totally forgotten that they're being evaluated at all, who are just treating us like a real patient. And the ones who often don't do as well are the ones who are treating it like a test, who you can see tracking down, you know, the questions and review of systems in their head, like they're, you know, like a resident's breathing over their shoulder or something like that. But the more it becomes about a real encounter, that's almost always going to be a better encounter.
So we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back in about 30 seconds.
Look, Short Coat fans, without you, we're nothing.
It's true. So we'd like to hear from you, and the more often, the better. If you've got something to say or want to react to a show or give us advice or talk about your cat, we don't care what it is. We just want to hear about it. There are a bunch of ways to tell us. Call us at 347-SHORT-CT or visit our website at theshortcoat.com and leave us a message. We'll read your message on the air, and we'd be super stoked to do it. Thanks for listening.
So we're back. Who has the next question?
So actually, I just have like a follow-up question to what you just said before the break. How would you feel about the medical curriculum changing its way of evaluating students from more of an objective way to more of a subjective way of you just saying kind of a, did the student was satisfactory or not satisfactory and just give them kind of a vague kind of a feedback as opposed to going through a list of this is the stuff you need to do and check mark, and you need a certain number of stuff. How do you feel about that?
Well, I mean, isn't it kind of objective and subjective right now? I mean, there's two parts to it.
People.
Yeah. I mean, there's for the PBA, you know, there's a checklist of medical stuff, which is objective. But then the communication skills is fairly subjective, you know, based on how the SP feels during the encounter. As for getting rid of the checklist, I think that's up to the doctors, not me.
Well, I mean, like you said, there's two parts of it, right? Maybe this, I don't think this has changed much since I once worked in the PBA program, but the first part is sort of, you know, that's the clinical skills part, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the part where, you know, you're looking for specific medically things.
Yes.
Like I'm not going to give anything away on what's on the checklist, but it's like, he looked at my hair follicles. And you're like, okay, check.
Yep.
So that's good. And then there's the second part, which is, you know, he or she conveyed empathy, or he or mm-hmm. she expressed concern, or he or she explained what was going on, or this kind of thing. So
right.
Those are that's the objective part, I guess, and then the subjective part.
And I think it's because they're hoping to evaluate both of those things. And the one that I think our skills are most important towards are the subjective, because you could evaluate the objective just by watching a videotape of the encounter. We're not really necessary for a lot of the evaluation of the objective, but the subjective, how the patient actually feels, whether they're, you know, whether they feel taken care of emotionally during the encounter, that you have to have the patient responding in some way. And Ellen, who has really done amazing things I've been in simulated programs all over the university and all sorts of different departments, and Ellen has been the best without any question in my mind. And she's always tinkering with it. She's always making it slightly more specific, trying to bring in concerns that weren't brought in before. She changed the communication skills checklist just a few months ago. It's the best it's ever been.
Constantly.
Yeah.
There are two aspects of the program that I don't think med students know very much about. One is the training we get. So I was kind of blithe when I was answering Dave's question about how I got trained at first. But for every single role, we spend at least 3 times working with a trainer, watching videos, scoring those videos, and they're looking for 90% or better agreement with the patient who was in the room. So a shout out to Michael Padawick and Nina Scott, who are currently doing all the training of us. And because two very skilled actors are doing that, they just want to stretch every SP to be a little more accurate, a little more articulate in our feedback. We share feedback with each other. We see Ellen shows us other people's feedbacks in the same character, so we sort of get a vocabulary. And then the other aspect of it, and it often involves somewhat the same people, are the quality assurance team, and they go through our videos, score it, and then, again, they're looking for agreement, and they're critiquing us. So if we miss something because we don't have perfect memories, or, you know, or we didn't or weren't very articulate, or if we say things like, great job, which doesn't help anybody do anything, they catch it. So the support we have to keep us growing and changing and thinking about what we're doing is really very great.
And this actually... I'm going to steal the student's thunder here because I remember one of the questions is from Sarah, who said,
you know, is there ever a comparison between the grades that SPs give out? I've experienced several that when I see them as I enter the room, I immediately know I will be getting a poor grade. And on discussion with other students, they have similar reactions. And so she was concerned that the PBA program, the examinations are sort of a luck of the draw kind of situation. And so I brought that to Ellen and I said, what would be your, you know, sort of response to that? And she mentioned the, you know, that as you said, during training, and this is not during just when they're first learning how to be an SP, this is before every exam. In fact, she said that they watch, the SPs watch videos and they do the checklist and then they're compared, as you said, to ensure at least 90% agreement with the person that was actually in the room at the time of the encounter. They also do a lot of role playing with trainers and spot checks. And as you said, the QA thing, that's new, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, no, it's been there as long as
okay,
I've been
so
there.
Okay, so I mean, the QA thing's been around.
4 or 5 years, I think.
So
as long as I've been there, you get written feedback about
the SPs
how
get
well you
feedback.
Did in that one encounter. Places where you were off base, places where you were inaccurate, and places in which you did they stroke the right things, but they also make sure you know where you can improve your performance. And I just love that safety of knowing, you know, one of the reasons I love this program rather than volunteering is volunteers are always the icing on the cake. This is a real job, and it has real accountability that goes with it, which I really like. I'm very curious, Dave, about how, and I want to ask the three of you, because you're the ones we have to ask, is that true? I mean, and do you think that whoever the student who said that might have been judging by gender or age or, I mean, how would you make that decision? That when you walk in the room, okay, I'm going to get a good grade, okay, I'm going to get a bad grade. Yeah, I'm just very curious about what's behind that.
So you're
that.
Looking at me as though I have the answer because I'm the judgmental
guy. Well, you're the,
yeah.
You're the older student in the room, aren't you?
I will tell you, I think one of the things, I don't know that I agree with this personally, but I have certainly heard this said by more than two handfuls of students. I mean, this is really not an uncommon sentiment from my anecdotal experience. Is it because of the sex or gender of the student? Is it because of the sex or gender of the standardized patient / examiner? I have not heard that. I have not heard anything specific. You know, it seems to be almost visceral that, you know, they walk in the room and like, oh man, this is just going to be a nightmare. And I don't know, without giving anything away, if it's a patient that whose persona is angry or what, but there, you know, I think we were talking about this earlier, there do seem to be SPs that are perceived in a particularly evaluatory sense versus, versus as a true patient. And one of my questions that I'll sort of allude to now was, you know, about the fact that you guys are, for obvious reasons, not as forthcoming with some of your symptoms or what you might be feeling as a true patient. And I think what that does is limits a collaborative relationship, because one of the things that I find really helpful from my patients is that they seem to want to get better by telling me what's wrong, not just saying, man, I really have this terrible chest pain. I really have terrible chest pain. They're telling me all about it. And SPs don't do that. They wait for me to ask those things. So I don't know if this comment about, you know, I just know immediately I'm going to get a poor grade is a comment towards things like that, or if it is a mannerism, a body language, as I'm sort of gesturing at JC because he's the coach and director and knows all about this. I don't know what it is, but I can tell you that I would probably say that this does not seem isolated to me. I have heard this from a fair number of students, particularly about the PBA program. I don't know that I've heard it as much. You guys comment on whether you think with the M1, M2 level, whether you get this sort of...
I think it's less about that. I mean,
yeah.
You know, when you're in the first and second years, right?
Yeah. So, like... I think I'm kind of a weird student because I've been out of the medical curriculum now for a couple of months. And
you're a medical student, medical scientist training program.
Yeah,
student,
yeah, whatever.
Breathing rarefied air up there.
That's right. he's all fancy.
Yeah. So it's kind of a breath of fresh air to like come back and just seeing like just SPs again and just seeing like the clinical world again, because it just feels so different when you're out of it. But getting back to the question is like the M1, M2 curriculum, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So do you think that this, my question, and maybe you guys, is this sort of negativity that's being projected on certain, is that limited to the PBA program or?
Or I remember there were times during second year, especially when we were really busy and we were really cranking down and the schedule was just so heavily loaded. It just felt like this was another thing that we had to do that was wasting our time to study. So it wasn't more about the patient. We were just frustrated and just really stressed out going into it. So I think, and it also just speaks with everybody's different personalities, you know, how they cope with stress or whatever. But the negativity that a student come in might not be what you SPs do, just kind of how it is.
Mm-hmm. They're just pissed off.
They're just pissed off. Right? Exactly. Yeah.
I have like a completely different experience from what I've heard from my classmates. I can say I've only heard maybe once or twice any negative comments about a certain SP or their experience during that particular evaluation. And then this year, as M2s, I think we, from what I've heard from other people, I think we all generally use that session as like a break from studying and from the hard, like, being into books all the time and being into studying so much. This is more of a real life clinical experience fun, and you get to play a doctor. So we use it more as a positive break.
And that may be the key point, because I'm, you know, in the clinical years, you're playing doctor every day, and this is sort of the departure in the opposite direction. This is less like playing doctor than your daily job. So that's sort of interesting.
I would like to thank you guys for coming in and talking to us, especially our guests, Mary Nell Jackson and J.C. Luxon, for joining us today. I appreciate that. It's been fun. And I want to thank you guys, Cole, Michael, Sunuri, and Keenan. Thanks so much for joining us.
A pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Short Code is produced by the Writing and Humanities Program at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine with support from Medical Student Government. You can visit us online at theshortcoat.com, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter too, where we post not only our episodes but news and info for medical students. We also take comments and story ideas from you, our listeners, via email at theshortcoats@gmail.com. Or leave us a voice message at 347-SHORT-CT. That's 347-746-7828. The producers are Jason T. Lewis and David T. Etler. Our opening music is by Dude Skywalker, and our closing theme music is by RAC. Thanks for listening.
But what I see's a child. Your eyes are glowing red, and your tongue has caught on fire. Things that you can't contain, and what it does.